Chapter 20.
Iden had wondered why she was always mending and polishing armor. Most of the time, the Dreamers didn't use it, preferring their nondescript gray flight suits. Iden thought perhaps they stripped the corpses of their clothing simply to have trophies. But now, they would prove highly useful. Because she was most familiar with Stormtrooper armor, at least as far as Staven knew, the Dreamer leader wanted her suited up for the mission. It would help her avoid recognition, which was unlikely but possible, until such time as she wanted to be recognized. And the HUD would be invaluable. Rebels might call them bucketheads, but Stormtroopers wore armor that was extremely functional. Her codes for Imperial space identification, as she had known they would be, were accepted. She was glad that Staven had finally decided to test them. If they continued to be good after too much longer, it would be suspicious. All was well as they set out. Their first stop? Akagarty's residence. The JSEC shuttle was brought in at night, flying dark and landing a safe distance away. It was large enough to contain a speeder that carried four, and Iden, Staven, Kaive, and Nadreen made their way to the perimeter fence. A pair of EMP grenades made short work of it. They waited to see if the crackling display triggered any reaction, but there was nothing. "To the house," Staven ordered.
"I can't believe we're just walking up to the front door,"
Kaive muttered.
"Backwater worlds rely pretty heavily on specific types of technology,"
Iden said.
"Once you know what they use, you know how to counter it."
They were not challenged when they approached the house. Iden had brought a bigger weapon into the fray, a DEMP, or Destructive Electromagnetic Pulse Ion Carbine. She used the highest setting. It discharged with a burst of blue filigrees and electromagnetic radiation, chasing one another over and around the residence, destroying any recorders, force fields, or other security devices. The other three targeted the door and fired, creating a burning hole. Cradling the DEMP in one arm, Iden reached out a hand for a blaster. Staven gave her one. She walked forward cautiously, blaster at the ready, then fired again and again through the gaping hole. When at last she stepped through, she saw four Stormtrooper bodies sprawled in the entry foyer. It was possible they weren't dead. Stormtrooper armor was designed to dissipate blaster shots. Iden couldn't risk them recovering and attempting to stop the Dreamer's plan. There was only one way to be sure.
"I'm so sorry,"
Iden thought, as she placed the blaster muzzle at the vulnerable juncture of torso and shoulder on each Stormtrooper.
"You die for the Empire."
She straightened. Her HUD revealed no immediate threat.
"Clear,"
she called back. The other three climbed carefully through the still-smoking entrance, and Staven said,
"Kids first, then the parents,"
as they raced inside. The house, not quite as large or as lavish as Moff Perez's, was dark and quiet. There was no other security in the area, and Iden suspected that if there were troopers or guards in the house, and it was possible there weren't, that the EMP attack might have drawn them all. They'd be locked in whatever rooms they'd found themselves in. No automatic doors would be working anywhere in the house.
"Stand back,"
Iden called. She fired at the door, then kicked it in. Akagarty's daughter, 7 years old, was standing away from the door as Iden had advised, fists clenched, her tears betraying her bravado as she stared up at Iden.
"Trooper," she asked, "what's going on out there?"
Iden felt a pang. This child was an Imperial citizen, one who did not fear stormtroopers, but saw them as a source of protection.
"Come with me,"
was all Iden said. She reached down and grasped the girl's arm, ready to clamp down if the child panicked or bolted. She did neither, accompanying Iden obediently as they left the child's room and went into the hallway. A sudden high-pitched shriek of terror told Iden that Staven had retrieved the little 3-year-old boy. The girl tensed but didn't pull away. It was only when she saw the door of her parents' bedroom open with Nadreen standing guard, cradling the large blaster in her arms with easy familiarity, that the girl put the pieces together and tensed to flee. But Iden dug her gloved fingers into the soft flesh of the child's upper arm and dragged her into the bedroom, despite her struggles.
Efor Emok Akagardi and his wife, who looked to be in their early 40s, wore sleeping clothes of comfortable-looking white fabric. They sat bolt upright in their beds, stiff as if they were made of stone, only their eyes darting about in helpless, hunted terror. But when they saw their children, the stillness shattered. The mother let out a wailing sob and surged forward, and Emok cried, "No, please, whoever you are, please don't hurt my family." Nadrine whipped the blaster around and pointed it directly at the woman, who froze, trembling, while Kaeve seized Emok and hauled him out of bed.
"Room's clear, by the way," Nadrine said to Staven. "No bugs."
"Good." He leaned over the child and said calmly, "Run to your mother." The boy scrambled to obey, racing to the bed where his mother scooped him up and clung to him tightly. To Iden, he said, "Let the girl go, too." The girl wrenched herself free, turning her small face up to Iden's helmeted one with a look of bitter disillusionment before she hastened to climb onto the bed. Her mother pulled her close as well. Staven turned to Emok.
"How your family fares in the next half hour is entirely up to you. And whoever we are happens to be Saw Gerrera's partisans."
Emok gaped at him. It was not an attractive expression.
That's not possible.
Staven backhanded the man savagely. His wife gasped, and the little boy whimpered.
"You're not fit to speak his name," Staven said, his lip curling with disgust. "He's gone, but the dream he had is alive and well. I hope your family will be able to say the same for you. Come on."
Staven dragged the cowering Efer to his feet, snapped a pair of stun cuffs on him, and shoved him in Staven's direction.
"Where are you taking me?"
"We're gonna pay a visit to the water purification plant."
The man blanched, and the mark Staven had left now stood out even more. Iden waited for the lies, the protests, the explanations, but all Emok said was,
"I'll do whatever you want, but I beg you, please don't hurt them."
"Good little dog," Staven approved. "Now my friend here is gonna wait here with your family. If any of your guards tries to come in here, he'll happily kill them. If any of your family tries to escape, he'll happily kill them too. Everyone clear on this?"
The three on the bed nodded silently.
"Good. Now, you three are going to have a front row seat at what we'll soon be showing to the rest of the galaxy."
He placed a palm-sized holoprojector down at the end of the bed.
"Are you gonna kill us?"
the girl asked. She had been crying, but her flushed face was composed now.
"Possibly," Staven said. "It all depends on what Emok does."
"Fair warning, you might learn a few things about your husband and dear old dad that you won't like. You'd better hope I'm happy with what happens in the next 15 minutes or so." He jerked his head toward the door.
"After you, trooper," he said mockingly.
Iden stepped back out into the hallway. She, Staven, Nadrine, and the hapless Akagarti would rendezvous with the JSEC shuttle outside. Akagarti would direct them to the water purification system's entry and, hopefully, cooperate by continuing the facade that all was well. Staven drove the speeder while Iden sat beside him. In the back of the four-person speeder, Nadrine pressed her blaster to Emok's temple. Iden's HUD continued to allow them to easily navigate the area. They met with no resistance. "Backwater security is a joke," Iden muttered. They arrived at an area marked by large, blocky buildings, the treatment plant for the mine's runoff.
"Which one is the last in the process?" Staven demanded. "Where the purified water is kept."
"That building on the far right," Emok said. "The cisterns are in there."
They got out of the speeder and approached the building. Staven and Adrien each carried a multi-frequency spotlight glow rod. They entered the building the same way they had entered the house, and Iden swapped out her demp for a blaster. Once inside, their glow rods revealed a gargantuan plastoid container about five stories high. Pipes led into it and away from it. The top was flat, and affixed to the side was a simple two-person lift. Each of the four walls of the vast room had a door large enough to permit machinery to pass in and out.
"Where did those lead, Emok?"
Staven asked. The man swallowed.
"Different rooms where processing occurs." "What kind of processing?"
"Screening, coagulation, sedimentation."
Staven cut him off.
"I think we should have a look at that too, then."
He smiled at Adrian.
"Can you take the speeder and handle that while the trooper and I conclude our business with Emok?"
The effer cringed very slightly at the turn of phrase.
"I'm on it."
She turned to Akagarty and showed him another hollow recorder, wagging it playfully.
"And the galaxy is going to see everything that I do."
Emok actually stumbled. I'd wondered if he was going to faint. She could almost smell the sour reek of fear. She thought back to Inferno Squad's first mission, where they had crashed the wedding of Moff Pyrrhes's daughter and recovered blackmail material, and asked,
"You don't have a bad heart, do you?"
He turned to her and, to her surprise, gave her a sad smile.
"No,"
he said,
"but I'm sure you all think that I do."
"Well,"
Saban said, with that awful brightness that presaged something dark and dangerous.
"Then let's head on up to the top and take a look around, shall we?"
He removed the stun cuffs and nudged Emok with his blaster.
"I'll be right behind you,"
Staven told the effer as he started to climb. Iden went to the one on the other side and ascended the great tank. Staven and Emok had reached the top shortly before she had. Still keeping his weapon trained on the effer, Staven strolled to the side of the vat and peered over.
"That's a long way down," he observed.
Akagarty bit his lower lip at the comment. The top of the cistern was completely flat, with a trap door in its center.
"Locked,"
she said.
"Do you have a key, Emok?"
He shook his head, and the apprehension on his face was obviously genuine.
No, he stammered. To be honest, I've not been here since the plant was formally opened. I've not been anywhere in here since then."
"Well then,"
Iden said, and fired her blaster at the lock. To her surprise, Emok cried out.
"Scare you?"
she asked.
"Yes,"
he said, staring at the smoking hole she'd blown in the door. She frowned and gazed at him searchingly. He was growing more agitated. Though that wasn't surprising, really. He had to suspect that whatever Staven intended, it would have been happening shortly. As if to confirm her thoughts, Staven angled his glow rod in her direction and said,
"Start recording."
Iden was ready. They'd discussed the sequence of events, and she'd been rehearsing it with the mentor. While Staven kept his blaster trained on the effer, Iden set down the holorecorder on the level surface. She gazed into it and began to speak.
"Citizens of the Empire, for we all are still citizens of the Empire. You have been tricked, lied to, betrayed, murdered. If you defied the Empire, you were killed, and even if you acquiesced and obeyed, kept your head down, you were still killed. I know. I once believed in the Empire, but I know better now."
She lifted her hands and removed the helm, shaking out her long hair, and gazed directly at the unnamed audience.
"My name is Iden Versio, and I'm a member of Saw Gerrera's partisans. I believe in the dream."
It was hard to believe, watching the strong-voiced, confident woman proclaiming her hatred of the Empire, that a few days ago, Iden was intimidated by public speaking.
"But that was Iden,"
Gideon mused. She never met a challenge she couldn't bend to her will.
"I've got to say," Azen said, sitting beside him at the ship's console.
"She's absolutely fantastic. I really didn't think she could pull it off."
"Obviously you don't know her,"
Gideon thought but didn't say. Instead, he watched, silently, as Iden, still clad in her stormtrooper armor except for the helmet, a theatrical touch suggested by the mentor, continued.
I am here on the planet Aphidar with Efer Emok Akagarty. He is the leader of the southernmost continent of Pamur, which is rich in forests, rivers, and mountains, and in minerals the Empire wants. Emok has assured his people that their water supplies won't be affected by the mining runoff. And I am here, standing atop a cistern supposedly full of purified water, to hold him to that promise.
Iden reached a gloved hand through the hole she'd blasted in the hatch door and pulled the door open, holding the holorecorder so that the viewer could see what she saw. The water was about 2 meters from the top. Gideon could hear it lapping quietly.
"It looks clean," Azen said. "I wonder if we're on a wild Karanak chase."
"The water certainly looks clean enough, and there's no smell. But there's one way to find if this water is potable."
She removed a bottle from her utility belt, fastened a cord securely to it, then lowered the bottle into the water. Once it was filled, she pulled it up and presented it to Emok.
"Here you go, Efer," she said. "Prove to us that this water is clear. Take a nice, long drink."
Emok stared at the proffered bottle blankly. At that moment, Gideon heard Nadrine speaking on her comlink.
"He won't believe this," she said. "We're still recording, right?"
"Yeah,"
Staven said. They were not live. Staven wanted to hedge his bets in case Iden froze up at a crucial moment.
"What have you found?"
"Nothing is what I found."
"I don't follow."
But Gideon did. He started to grin.
"Water needs to be processed at several levels before it's potable,"
Nadrine was saying.
"I found cisterns full of fresh runoff, and the first few layers of processing, eliminating solids, removing anything that clouded or colored the water, that sort of thing. But then, there are 2 rooms where the cisterns are empty. The pipes completely bypass them."
"So you're saying that there are levels of processing that are simply not happening?"
Iden said, trying to get clarification for the hologram's future audience.
"That's exactly what I'm saying. Half of this plant is just for show."
Iden turned to Emok.
"Those filtration systems must be expensive to purchase and maintain," she said. "Much easier to just produce water that appears to be filtered. Who's going to know the difference, Emok? Not your family. I'm willing to bet they drink water brought in from the north, or maybe even off-world."
Emok didn't answer. Again, Iden thrust the bottle at him.
"Drink, or we'll kill you where you stand."
He extended a hand, wrapped his fingers around the white bottle.
"I'll be happy to drink," he said.
And true to his word, he took several long gulps.
"Damn it, stop recording, Iden!"
Staven was annoyed. But Iden wasn't about to listen.
"One of the chief dangers of this runoff is the fact that it contains a large amount of dangerous heavy metal and bacteria. Not enough to harm someone in a single serving. But children are advised not to drink it, because they're much more susceptible. Isn't that right, Efer Akagarty?"
"I don't know what you mean,"
the man replied, not meeting Iden's gaze.
"The hell he doesn't,"
Gideon muttered.
"Iden, you're brilliant."
"So you're saying this is safe for children?" "I hope you're right. Kaeve, you are with Emok's family. How are they doing?"
"So far, so good."
Kaeve was trying to play along, but he had no idea what Iden was doing.
"Good. Make sure the boy has a nice, refreshing drink of filtered water his father says is perfectly harmless."
"Handing the bottle to him now,"
said Kaeve, catching on. There was no bottle, of course. There hadn't been time or opportunity to stop off here, fill up a bottle, and then break into the house to kidnap the Efer's family. But Emok didn't know that.
"No!"
Emok shouted.
"No, Taryi, don't drink it! None of you touch it!"
And there it was. To save his family, Emok might drink a few mouthfuls of the obviously toxic water, but he wouldn't put his vulnerable child in jeopardy. It was almost noble. Almost. Azen couldn't tear his eyes from the riveting drama that was unfolding, as Iden had banked on. While the ISB agent stared at the man begging for his children's lives, Gideon feigned a stretch. His right arm extended upward and back, locating and touching a button on the hovering droid. It slowly, soundlessly, moved away to another part of the ship to do what Dell had programmed it to do. There was still plenty of time to escape. Time enough for Gideon to enjoy Emok's unraveling.
You took the credits that were intended for the water treatment and kept them for yourself,
Iden was saying.
You blamed the outbreak of bacteria on a particularly rainy season. Your mansion, with its soft beds and lavish furnishings, was bought with the blood of your people. You don't want your children poisoned, but you'll poison thousands of others.
She turned to Emok. He was on his knees now, one hand on his stomach. Whatever he had drunk wouldn't kill him, but it was clearly making him sick.
Can you swim?
She asked him. Before he could answer, she had grabbed Emok and flung him into the water. He screamed in protest and made a wholly satisfying splash. Iden closed the door. Gideon could hear his voice, muffled and unintelligible. If he couldn't swim, he would die. If he could, he might be able to manage long enough for rescue to get there. Staven began a slow clap.
Nice work, Iden, he said. Throwing him in was a great touch.
Thanks, she said. We should get out while we can, though.
Not just yet. I'm going to record the other rooms, too,
came Nadrine's voice.
Come on back, Nadrine, Staven ordered. Iden's right. We should get out. We have enough to make a hell of a message.
It won't be long. Just hang on,
Nadrine replied.
You'll thank me when you see this stuff. It's like the set of a holodrama. It's completely fake.
Okay, but make it quick.
Gideon stiffened slightly. This was not a good development. He and the rest of Inferno Squad had worked the timing out to the minute. He rose and went to the restroom. He needed to make sure that later he could honestly say that Aizen was unsupervised in the cockpit for a few minutes. As Iden's father had taught them, the best lies had truth in them.
Chapter 21.
Call her back, Staven, Iden urged. We're on borrowed time as it is.
Have you ever tried making Nadrine do something she doesn't want to do?
Staven said. He meant it as a joke, but she could tell he was growing increasingly worried. Another minute ticked by. Two. Sealed inside the cistern of poisoned water, Emok was still shouting out pleas. Well, we know he can swim, Iden thought.
Okay, I'm in the speeder and heading back,
Nadrine said. Iden relaxed ever so slightly and put her helm back on.
Good. Let's get the hell out of here.
He clicked on his comm link.
Aizen, Gid, head down and pick us up where you dropped us off.
Roger that,
came Aizen's voice.
Kaiv, do you copy? Stun them and head on out to the rendezvous.
Got it.
Iden stamped on the closed door of the cistern before she left, climbing down the ramp affixed to the huge container.
Nadrine, said Staven as he dropped the last few rungs. Where the hell...
Blasterfire screamed through the door. Damn it, Iden thought as she and Aizen fired back. If it hadn't been for Nadrine wanting more images, they'd have been safely in the shuttle by now, able to flee just ahead of the pursuing security vessels that would be sent out. The plan had been so perfect, and yet, even as she had the thought, she heard her father's voice in her mind. There is no foolproof recipe for success. There is only the best chance of success.
Aizen, Gid, get yourselves here now!
Staven shouted into his comlink over the sound of blaster fire.
Nadrine, meet us at the rendezvous. Look sharp, we've got troopers.
I'm coming as fast as I can,
Nadrine cried.
No pursuit so far!
Staven,
and Kaeve's voice was high with tension.
I stunned the family, but somehow security's been alerted.
We'll come to get you,
Staven said. He and Iden kept firing, and then there was silence from outside. But Iden still heard the sound of blaster fire coming through Staven's comlink.
You can't,
and Kaeve was now shouting to be heard above the shriek that was starting to drown out his words.
Five of them! Troopers!
Another shot, then silence.
Cave!
Said Staven. Then louder.
Cave!
Staven pressed his lips together in a grim line. Their chances had been good, but Nadrine might have doomed them all.
Gideon ground his teeth in frustration as the shuttle headed towards Staven's coordinates. Damn Nadrine, anyway. Everything would have been fine. The Dreamers had gotten what they'd come for. There had been no need to dawdle over fake canisters. He'd instructed the droid to activate the homing beacon Del had placed on the shuttle before they left, with plenty of time to both escape and put up a fight. With Nadrine's delay, security would have been there any... The vessel rocked violently from a glancing hit.
Minute.
What the hell? Aizen shouted. How did they find us?
No time for questions, Gideon yelled back. I fly, you fire. Got it?
The JSEC security vessel was responsive as such things went, but it felt that he was piloting through mud. He brought it up as fast as he could. The good and bad news was that the three Imperial ships firing on them were TIEs. Good. Because Gideon was so familiar with them, he could mount a good defense. And bad because, well, they were TIEs. It felt odd to line up the familiar vessel in his sights, but he did so. Aizen apparently had no qualms about firing on an Imperial starfighter either. He blasted it to pieces and shouted,
"Give me another!"
Considering the TIE pilots were trying to kill them, Gideon obliged as fast as he could. He banked hard to the left, almost but not quite escaping bolts of green laser energy. The ship shuddered again. The console started to smoke.
Droid, get on that!
Gideon ordered, and the droid immediately set to work. Gideon completed the maneuver and swung back around to see the TIE that had hit them clearly preparing for a second shot.
Get it!
Gideon shouted. And grunting with anger and effort, Aizen did so. It was strange to be happy to see a TIE fighter explode.
Another coming in on your right,
Aizen warned. Gideon swerved hard in that direction, going under and up from beneath the one remaining ship.
Both men cheered as Aizen got it in his sights and fired. Grinning, Gideon glanced down at the console.
All clear, he said.
Let's get to Staven.
And hope we're not too late, Gideon thought. Iden and Staven stood outside in the deceptive quiet. Sprawled on the ground were two scout troopers, their speeder bikes a few meters away.
Nadrine,
Staven said into his comlink,
where are you? There are biker scouts out here, so be...
I think I found them,
came Nadrine's voice. She was barely audible over the sound of the roaring speeder and the shrieks of blasters. Staven looked at Iden. For the first time, there was nothing cold or sullen or mirthful about his face. His emotions were naked and on display, and he was terrified for someone he loved.
I got one of them,
came Nadrine's voice. Then a sudden volley of blaster fire, then nothing.
Nadrine,
Staven said. The hand that held the blaster trembled.
Nadrine, answer me!
We got company,
Iden said. Her HUD had alerted her to an incoming vessel, and it wasn't the JSEC security fighter. Staven didn't reply. She turned to look at him. He was staring, frozen at his comlink, straining to listen. To hear the voice of someone who would never speak again.
Staven,
she said again, sharply this time.
Step to it, soldier!
He blinked, as if coming out of a trance, and looked up. The comlink fell from his fingers. The very familiar shape of a Lambda-class T-4A shuttle was now visible with the naked eye. This wasn't how it was supposed to end, Iden thought. But life or death rarely unfolded as it was supposed to. She grimly lifted her blaster, a feeble and utterly futile gesture against a ship armed with laser cannons. Beside her, Staven did the same. Calm in the face of her death, Iden found herself wondering whether the vessel would land and disgorge its contents of 20 stormtroopers, or just take them out in a volley of cannon fire. She would never find out. A green streak sliced through the night sky. Fire blossomed on one of the T-4A's wings. More laser fire, and the ship began to wobble, imbalanced as it tried to loop around to return fire. Another strike at its wings, and then again at its engines. The shuttle got off a laser cannon volley, but it came nowhere near its target. The JSEC vessel dove beneath it, fired up, and got out of the way as the ship, its engines and wings both damaged, crashed into the landscape about half a kilometer away. Iden could hardly believe it. She half laughed, half gasped, as the familiar ship settled down and the ramp extended. 10 seconds later, Iden and Staven were on board. Azen looked back at them.
Where are Nadrine and Kaif?
Gone, said Staven, his voice a harsh rasp. Get us out of here.
We may have company very soon, Gideon said. Get in your crash webbing.
They had barely done so when the ship lifted off, soaring almost completely vertically upward, breaking through the wisps of cloud up to open space. Then the stars turned into white streaks. Iden exhaled and closed her eyes for a moment, preparing for the next step.
What happened? Azen demanded. What went wrong?
No idea, Staven said. He still looked disoriented and disconcertingly blank.
He pressed the heels of his hands against his temples, as if physically forcing himself to think, his mind to clear.
Could someone have a homing beacon on the ship without us knowing? Iden said. The next step in springing the trap.
Impossible, scoffed Azen. We were both here in the ship the whole time.
Never left this console except when I hit the restroom, Gideon said.
He feigned a look of concern.
Still, hell, it's worth checking at least.
Droid, check the ship for any tracking devices.
The droid beeped acknowledgement and hovered off. There was silence for a while, as Gideon checked the ship for damage and the droid went about its inspection. Staven rose at one point and went back to the ship's galley. Over the quiet hum of the vessel, she heard the distinctive clinking sound of a bottle against a glass rim and the sloshing of liquid. Staven returned, carrying both bottle and drained glass, and poured himself another shot. The sound of the droid beeping shrilly startled all of them. It sped back, moving anxiously, holding something in one of its pincers.
What the...
Gideon said, as the droid dropped the item into his hand. He lifted his head and turned to look at Azen. Pure loathing contorted his handsome features.
You lying sack of...
He lunged for the startled Azen, wrapping one hand around the man's throat and keeping his other hand clenched around the object the droid had found.
Gid, no! Iden shouted.
Staven sprang into action, dropping glass and bottle as he inserted himself between the two now-fighting men. He shoved Gideon backward and forced open the pilot's hand. Staven stared at what Gideon held.
It's a homing beacon,
he muttered. Iden rose and went to look at it. Not Imperial, she said.
No, Staven said. This is one of ours.
The droid made several beeping and chirping noises.
The droid found it on the inside, Gideon said, which means that he planted it.
He stabbed an angry finger at Azen.
Me,
yelped Azen. Why would I want to do that?
He was alone when I used the restroom, Gideon said. He could easily...
Iden, Staven said. Give me your blaster.
She did. And he lifted it up so that it was trained on her. She blinked.
What? Go get 3 sets of stun cuffs. Put one on Gideon and one on yourself and give the third to me. All I know right now is that Nadrine is dead, and Kaif too, and one of you three is responsible.
I was with you the whole...
Iden began. You might not have planted it yourself, but I've never really trusted you, Iden. So Azen will take us home, and you and Gid will sit in cuffs until we get there, and then we'll find out who did this, and once we do...
His lips curved in that ugly, cruel smile.
The Dreamers are gonna have some sport.
Iden stayed calm. This was all playing out as expected. The only thing they hadn't accounted for was that Staven appeared dangerously unstable from grief.
Fortunately, he refrained from killing anyone before Aizen had brought the damaged ship down. He extended the ramp, and Iden, Gideon, and Aizen, now also in stun cuffs, preceded him. Staven had alerted his people to meet the shuttle, and now they all stared with various expressions of shock and anger as he explained what had happened.
Piakow! Del! He shouted, his voice ragged with pain. Check the ship for sabotage. Iden, Aizen, Gid, on your knees. Hands behind your head.
Dana glanced at Iden.
Staven? Do it!
This was not the time to protest, and clearly Dana recognized that. Staven looked like he was clinging to sanity by the thinnest of threads, and his fingers clearly itched to blow the traitors away. Probably the only thing that restrained him was a desire to know what they had done that had made things go so horribly wrong. Iden knelt and placed her hands behind her head.
We don't leave until we've checked out the ship, Staven continued. None of us.
Someone had brought extra glow rods. Del, more mobile than Piakow, began to inspect the vessel itself, while the Chadrafan analyzed the ship's computer. Iden was glad of this. It would be much better if Piakow came across what Del had labored first so hard to create, than to conceal it until the time was right. No one said anything. Dana handed out water to everyone. Staven waved his away, his attention fixed on Gideon, Aizen, and mostly Iden. Time passed. Iden's legs and arms began to cramp. But given Staven's twitchy fingers, she didn't dare move. Finally, Piakow appeared on the ramp.
Staven, he said, please come here.
Iden's heart sped up. Something was about to happen that might well see her dead within the next 3 minutes.
Rue, Staven said, keep an eye on him.
Rue nodded, taking Staven's blaster and training it on the captives. The Coggy's eyes were cold despite their warm tint. The seconds went by, then a minute, then two. Staven appeared on the ramp.
Swift as a snake strike, he snatched the blaster from Rue's grasp, closed the distance between himself and Aizen, and slammed the butt of the weapon against his head.
Iden sagged forward, the relief making her feel weak. Dana extended a hand to help her up. She accepted, wincing at the stiffness as life rushed into numb limbs. Beside her, Rue assisted Gideon as he got to his feet. Dana unfastened her stun cuffs, her purple eyes wide with shock.
What the hell?
Grated Aizen, hand clapped to his bloodied skull.
Tell them! Shouted Staven. Tell them what you found, Piakow!
More subdued than she had ever seen the lively Chadrafan before, Piakow obliged. In a low voice that conveyed his shock, he spoke of listening in disbelief to what he fully believed he had heard, what anyone without access to highly complex equipment would have believed they heard. Recorded conversations Aizen had conducted with someone in Imperial Intelligence. And finally, he listed various identities Aizen had utilized in these conversations. Conversations that Del had cobbled together from bits and pieces of the logs Aizen had recorded over the months he was at JSEC with a bit of creative doctoring. Then, his ears drooping, Piakow returned to the cockpit. There was a stunned silence.
So what it tells me, Staven said in an unnaturally calm voice, is that the entire time I've known you, Aizen, you've been planning to turn us over to the Empire. It's not true.
Aizen looked around frantically, still bleeding, finding no sympathy in the eyes of people who had trusted him.
I would never betray you.
His wide-eyed gaze fell on Iden, and he spat out blood and a tooth in her direction.
You, he growled. You did this to me.
Me? Iden did her best to look shocked. Why would I want to do this? She turned to Staven. He was shaking, his fists clenched, ready, eager to take another swing at the traitor.
Staven, I've given you several codes, pieces of intel, and all of them have been successful. And just now, I'm the one who got what we needed out of Akagarty. Some of these missions have had high Imperial body count. Why would I participate in that if I were working for the Empire?
Still reeling from the revelation, Steven grasped at the straw Azen offered.
Maybe you're a double agent, Steven spat at Aiden. Maybe you set this up and it's all a trick. I don't even have a code to that ship's computer. I was under house arrest when I flew it, Aiden replied. You've all watched me like a sheerhawk. When the hell did I have time to do anything? If I were that brilliant, I'd be the damned Empress.
At that moment, Piakau again appeared at the top of the ramp.
It took me a little while, but now that I've been able to get into the databanks, I've uncovered an entire sublevel of Imperial intel.
Intel that is all false. Except for what it says about Azen, Aiden thought. She bit the inside of her cheek so that she didn't smile. Del and Sen had outdone themselves, and in so short a time.
I've run some checks on the code names. Steven, there are even pictures. It's him. That's true.
All the color drained from Azen's normally florid face until his skin was a sickly, milky shade. Aiden rejoiced fiercely. He knew he was beaten. How did you do it? He whispered, turning to look at her through a drying mask of blood on his face. You couldn't possibly know any of this. What did you do? What did you do? She scoffed in disbelief. Me? Not a damn thing. But you? She smiled cruelly. You just doomed yourself. He sagged, then lifted his head. He knew better than to look to Saven. There would be no forgiveness there. So he looked to a gentler man. But even the mentor, it seemed, had his limits. His brow was knotted and his blue eyes blazed in righteous anger. So many in this galaxy are born into their fates, he said. They labor and suffer and die, unable to alter them, unable sometimes even to hope that something will change. I've lost people I loved fighting for those who couldn't fight for themselves, who couldn't choose. You were one of the lucky ones who could, Azen, and you chose the Empire. You chose to betray those who believed you to be a friend. Don't you dare look to me for mercy. I've stood in both places of this war, too. But I made a decision, and I will live or die by my choice. Kaeve and Nadrine did die for theirs. You will die for nothing. Azen looked like a trapped animal who felt the net closing in. But it was too late for any escape, any appeal for sympathy. He'd never been a pleasant person, not to anyone. Tell us what you know, Steven said. His voice was flat, dead, which was somehow more sinister than his fury. And you'll make it quick, is that it? Azen shook his head, recovering some composure, some little shred of dignity. No, I refuse. Now, at the end, he was finally behaving like an Imperial, Aiden thought. A sort of energy went through those gathered. They knew what that meant. Aiden did too. She'd seen reports for what partisans did for information. The Empire performed torture as well, from time to time, as necessary. But it was more elegant. It caused pain without damage. Well, physical damage, at least. The Dreamers would not be so scrupulous. You're going to have to work for everything you get from me, Azen said. Don't worry, said Steven. We will. They did. It took 7 hours for Azen to die.
Chapter 22.
The mood was somber that night at the encampment. Work would begin on the shuttle, but not yet. Everyone needed to process what had happened. Steven had ordered that Azen's corpse be put in the usual place, though even crunchers might well choke on such putrid meat, he had added. Upon his return to the encampment, he'd wordlessly taken a speeder bike and roared off by himself.
No one seemed to notice or care when the members of Inferno Squad did the same thing, one by one. Iden had directed them to a specific spot she'd found during her daily runs. Although they'd all grown largely accustomed to living in near darkness, they'd brought their night vision goggles to keep alert for predators, both the two-legged and the multi-legged kind. "It's good to see you," Iden said.
"It's good to see you and Gideon at all, considering what happened on the mission," Del said. "And Staven wasn't very stable when he got off the shuttle, either. I thought he was going to blast you first and figure things out later."
"You weren't the only one," Gideon said, then added lightly, "although I'd have made a fine leader if that had happened."
"Not yet," Iden said.
She looked at them and squared her shoulders. "A good day's work for sure, but we still haven't made inroads on where the Partisans have been getting their information. Nothing they had been able to obtain from Del's investigation into Azen via the ship's logs indicated he had anything of note. It did look like he had hoped kidnapping Iden would be the big score to restore his favor in the eyes of ISB.
I guess either Staven has his own informant off-world that he's being extraordinarily tight-lipped about, or else your friend, the mentor, is sitting on something he's doling out sparingly," Sen said.
"He's not my friend," Iden said, quicker than she intended. "There's tension between those two, and we need to start pushing that hard," she said. "Gideon, Staven seems to have taken to you. He's going to need a friend right now after Nadrine's death and Azen's betrayal. Plant some doubt in his head about the rest of the group, even me if you have to, but especially the mentor and those who seem to think like him."
"I will be the absolute best friend Staven's ever had," Gideon promised.
"How are things going with Piakow?" Iden asked Del.
"Fine. He seems to like everyone, and everyone likes him."
Iden shook her head. "Not good enough. Piakow appears to operate on an even keel. Convince him that Staven isn't a trustworthy leader anymore." "Sen," she turned to the youngest member of the team, "so far you've done a fine job ingratiating yourself with the Vushans. Keep up the good work. I'll continue trying to get information from the mentor. Does anyone have any questions?"
There were none.
"All right. We'd better wander back to the encampment. It's all right for us to be seen together now, I think. We're all welcome here at this point. But I'd rather it not happen too often. Calm me if you learn anything or you think there's trouble." Gideon punched Del in the shoulder.
"Come on, brother mine. Let's head on back."
"Hey, quit punching me," Del said good-naturedly. "I'm your big brother, remember?"
But I'm the witty and dashing younger brother who flies the ship and gets to have all the fun."
Their voices faded. Sen started to head back too, but Iden said, "Sen, I need a word."
"Of course,"
the other woman replied promptly.
"We've all been making friends here, but you're the only one who's involved in... well, I suppose it's a romantic relationship."
"Not to worry, Captain. I don't love Sidori any more than Gideon is Staven's best friend."
"If there is something between you two, I need to know. Things like that can get tricky."
"Permission to speak freely."
At Iden's nod, Sen said,
"I've worked with literally hundreds of agents, many in deep cover. I'm well aware of the peril of getting emotionally involved. Besides, he's just a teenager."
"He's 18, you're 20, Iden said. "It's not that big of an age gap, but your point is well taken.
I'm sorry I questioned your judgment."
"It's understandable, Captain. Will that be all?"
"Dismissed." On impulse, Iden decided to climb one of the trees. She was feeling stifled under the deep canopy. When she stuck her head out of the leafy cover, pulled off her night goggles, and beheld the glittering starfield, she felt a tug of homesickness. How she wanted to be out there in the Corvus, wearing her uniform again. She had asked Sen not because she doubted the other woman's resolve, but because she herself was surprised by how the deaths had affected her. It had been part of the plan, of course, and at the time the idea had been conceived, she had felt nothing. But Caeve and Nadrine had been easy to like, and seeing the anguish in Staven and how it had affected all the Partisans, she didn't like where her thoughts were going.
Permission to come aboard, Captain? Del called. Despite her somber mood, she was smiling as she said, Permission granted. Within a few minutes, he was on a branch beside her. Thought you were headed back to camp with Gideon.
Couldn't help but notice you wanted to talk to Sen.
He pulled off his goggles and looked at the stars, as she had done, then turned to her.
You okay?
We got rid of Azen and cemented our position in the group. Why wouldn't I be?
I just wanted to make sure you weren't too rattled by what happened today, he replied. We chat with, laugh with, eat with, and fight alongside these people, even sleep next to them. They're still the enemy. This is harder than combat. It's easier to kill someone whose favorite color you don't know, or who hasn't trusted you with their dreams. He paused, then said, Gideon told me Staven cried.
Really?
I asked, surprised. He did. It shook him. It's the second time he's lost a woman he loved.
I suppose we can use that, Aiden said. There must have been something in the tone of her voice, because he turned to look at her.
They're rebels, Aiden, Del said kindly. They're not people. We can't think of them like that. If we do, we can't finish what we came here to do.
Were you trying to convince me or yourself? Aiden asked.
Both of us, I guess.
If Gideon were here, he'd say, Thinking about them as people makes you soft, and Versios aren't soft. And he'd be right, wouldn't he?
Aiden was more than ready for another mission to happen, and glad that Sen, who had done so much without complaining behind the scenes for so many others, was going to finally see some action. As long as Sen returned safely, Aiden didn't even care if the mission was a success or a failure. Success would buoy Staven and distract him from his moodiness that so often seemed to be directed her way. Failure would make him more unstable and give the mentor something to point to. It was a fairly straightforward mission, though it relied heavily on Sidori and Sen being convincing in their roles as two teenage schoolchildren. The event was a public relations stunt. The relatively calm world of Anukara was opening a munitions factory. Anukara's moff, Riss Dexia, would be playing host to General Ival Toshin for a public ceremony to open the plant. Students from a nearby school would be given a special tour and get to meet their moff and the general. Afterward, there would be a luncheon for the dignitaries. The idea was for Sen and Sidori to blend in with the students and plant a bomb at the final stop of the tour, the Great Hall. It would kill the moff and the general, and in Staven's words, send a strong message about how far we're willing to go to stop the Empire.
Dana frowned a little. You'll delay the opening, and that'll cost them a lot of credits, which is good. But while Toshin and Dexia are public figures, they're not very highly placed, she said.
Aiden and her team, of course, had offered no objection to the plan. This was as her father had warned her. Sometimes her own people would have to die. She thought of the stormtrooper, beaten bloody, who had died still trying to rally and fight. The assassination of a moff and a mid-level general would be a black eye to the Empire. But Dana was right. This wasn't a statement about how far they would go.
No, they're not, but you see, they're not the real targets.
Aiden had a terrible suspicion. He couldn't possibly be suggesting what she thought he was. Not even the dreamers would...
It's the children.
Several people spoke at once, most of them sounding as stunned as Aiden felt.
We're not child murderers, snapped Dana.
There's nothing more innocent than a youngling, Staven,
Pia Kao pleaded. The Kagi said nothing, but Sidori looked stunned, his gray face paler than usual. Her team was struggling to keep their composure, and Aiden herself felt cold sweat gathering at her brow line and under her arms.
Absolutely not.
The voice was deep with anger, resonant, and brooked no disagreement. The mentor, who usually sat quietly and seldom even offered an opinion when the missions were being assigned, was on his feet.
His fists were clenched, and his eyes were bright with righteous fury. Staven didn't rise. He stayed seated atop one of the flattened boulders, meeting the mentor's hot fury with cold eyes.
"This isn't your group, mentor," he said. "You have no voice here."
"I will not allow this, Staven," the mentor continued, as if Staven hadn't even spoken. "This is too far. I told Saw, and I will tell you, there are limits to what you can do. If you exceed them, you are on the side of hate and cruelty, and that's the side of the Empire. If you want to sit next to them at the table, killing children is the quickest way to do it. I've given everything to fight the Empire."
Now Staven did rise and took two steps toward the mentor.
"Everything! I've got nothing left but hate and cruelty. And I will shove that down the Empire's throat every chance I get until they choke on it."
"The mentor's right," said Staven's second in command. "We can't kill innocent children."
"Dana, these aren't innocent children," Staven said. "They've been robbed of their innocence because they're children of the Empire. They're already rotting on the inside. They may be young, but their family, their friends, their culture is our enemy. And they'll grow up to get into stormtrooper uniforms and kill us and our loved ones."
Aiden swallowed hard as the words of her father came back to her. "The child of a rebel may be a child yet, but we must look to the future. It will grow up to be an enemy, and our enemies must be destroyed."
"Our enemies must be destroyed."
Aiden wasn't aware that she had just spoken until all heads turned toward her. The mentor looked startled. Her jaw tensed, but she didn't deny the words. She had to communicate to her team that no matter how brutal or personally devastating the task, they had to complete it. They couldn't risk the mission. Aiden made a vow, then and there. This would be the last mission in which they would participate. Her team would set the mentor and Staven against each other just like they were now, their own codes and morals like sharp teeth rending one another. Inferno Squad would determine who had the intel, where it was hidden, and take it. And let the tiny handful that remained of Saw Gerrera's partisans see their dream drown in despair and discord. The beast would devour itself. Del had been able to hack into the system and obtain the codes that permitted them to land near a school shuttle filled with nearly 400 excited human children, ages 14 through 18. Dressed in matching school uniforms, Sen and Sidori walked over to board the shuttle. Only humans were admitted into the school, so Sidori was disguised. He had spent over an hour having his pale gray face and neck covered with concealing cosmetics. He wore contacts that turned his naturally pink eyes brown and hid their soft glow. Fortunately, the school permitted gloves as long as they were black.
"We do this all the time,"
he had told Sen.
"This is a weapon that's every bit as important as a blaster or a vibroblade. Coggies aren't commonly seen outside of quartzite, so if we don't want to attract attention, on this stuff goes."
Sen, who had supervised so many undercover agents, was impressed. Each Coggy had their own palette. While all three had had gray skin, their shades varied, and the cosmetic hues were selected to match the tone as much as possible. Halia, for instance, would apply warmer, darker colors that made her resemble Aiden, whereas paler Sidori's human color was closer to Gideon's. This school was not a military one, so Sidori was able to keep his long black locks and thus conceal his Coggy ears. If someone took the time to examine him, they might notice the flaws, but Sen knew from experience that people generally saw what they expected to see. Sure enough, the harried teachers glanced cursorily at the two students, and then at the IDs Sen had so carefully crafted, and waved them through without pause. Sidori was proud of her. Sen had expected nothing less.
"Go all the way to the back and fill in all the seats," one of the teachers instructed.
Sidori went first. Sen followed. Then...
"Wait!"
Sen tensed.
The teacher, a tall, slender man with sharp features and a dully pained expression, peered at the droid affixed to Sen's back.
You can't take the droid with you.
Check the card, Sen said, as if she was tired of reminding people. I've got a medical condition that it helps monitor. He looked at her skeptically, then reread her ID card.
All right, you can bring it, but it will have to go into the compartment at the rear during the flight.
Sen rolled her eyes and then said, Okay, okay. She looked over her shoulder and addressed the droid.
You heard him, she said. Go on, I'll wait for you outside when we get there.
The droid booped its acknowledgement, detached itself, tucked up its limbs, and flew over the heads of the excited students as it made its way to the rear of the shuttle. Sidori had already found a seat and waved her over.
Are you nervous? His voice was pitched low as he reached for Sen's hand and squeezed it.
She squeezed back.
A little, she said.
And it wasn't entirely a lie.
How many agents had she monitored? How many more had she sent into the field in situations nearly identical to the one she was experiencing now? She could do a count if she had the time, but knew it was numbered in the hundreds. And how many didn't make it back?
She pushed the thought aside. She had to focus on the job at hand. She settled back into her seat, making no effort to remove her hand from his gloved one. It helped with their cover. Two teenagers more engrossed in each other than anything else. No one looked twice. Beneath their uniforms, as always, when the Partisans went on a mission, they both wore patches of the malleable explosives. The material was difficult to detect, and while the Empire did have the technology to do so, such scanners were still new, prone to breaking, and very expensive. The intel that they had on the plant on Onokara was that such equipment had not yet been installed. Sen hoped that was still true. If not, the droid would be able to disable the scanner. The flight to the weapons factory was filled with the loud sounds of rambunctious students and completely uneventful. When they exited the shuttle, Sen waited, and the droid emerged and immediately settled again onto her back.
Let's go, Sidori said.
He leaned over as if to kiss her cheek, but instead whispered, You're going to do great. She smiled at him and fished out her comlink.
Hi, Dad, she said brightly. We're here, waiting to get in. I am so excited.
Stop making me feel old, Del said. Will you get to keep the calm? Your mother and I are worried, you know? She could imagine Aiden's eye roll.
Sidori, so much taller than she, craned his neck to look up ahead and nodded to her.
Looks like, she told Del.
We'll be there to pick you up when you're all done. Just let us know when you're ready.
Thanks, I'll talk to you soon.
Garrick Versio had been right. The trick in deceiving someone was to mix as much truth as possible into your lies and be relaxed about what you were doing. Sen agreed completely. If you behaved as if you belonged, people usually overlooked you. Some, in fact, could smell fear, and sweat droplets or quick breathing were dead giveaways among human and near humans, as had been the case at the Singularity bombing. So she held her boyfriend's hand and looked excited and obeyed instructions as the river of students was shuttled through. She had to rely on Sidori's height advantage for information about what was around them. He told her everything he noticed that was of import, couching the information in ways that sounded completely innocuous, such as, Well, there must be at least 25 stormtroopers here. They're lined up on both sides of the gate. He was extremely good at this. If his parents had the same skill level, then Staven was squandering them by only using the coggies in a fight. They gathered outside the main entrance, where an exaggeratedly large red ribbon draped across the huge door to the building. A stormtrooper stood rigidly at attention, his gloved hands closed about the hilt of a lengthy vibroblade that would shortly be cutting the ribbon. The ceremony was open to the public. The intel that Staven said he had obtained indicated that this would be the most heavily secured area. If anything was to go wrong, it would most likely be here. While they waited, Sen went over the plan. At approximately 0900 local time, the local moth, Riz Deksha, and the visiting dignitary, General Ival Toshin, would emerge to formally open the factory. Speeches and posing for the cam droids was expected to last 20 minutes, and then the students would be admitted for their tour of the facility. Their IDs would be checked once more, but security was expected to be relaxed, as this was a contained, previously screened group of local teenagers. They would begin moving through the factory at 0920, and the two-hour tour would culminate with a half-hour meet-and-greet at 11:30 in a receiving area that had been laid out for a banquet. There, the students would be permitted to interact with the general, the Moth, and their aides. At noon, the students would return to their shuttle, and the dignitaries would be served luncheon at the same site at 12:30. Except that wasn't what would happen. At 11:55, everyone in the room would be dead. The ribbon-cutting ceremony went off smoothly, with Deksha and Toshin keeping their speeches brief and to the point. Sen knew of Toshin and was aware that he, like so many Moths, had a preference for the finer things in life. She wondered if someone in a position of authority was unhappy with his performance recently and had sent him out to this backwater world as a reprimand. He certainly didn't look like someone who was happy to be here. After the speeches, each of the two men placed one hand on the vibroblade's hilt and together cut the ridiculous ribbon, which fluttered prettily in a sudden breeze. Everything was captured by the cam droids. It was intended to be what was called a fluff piece, but later, Sen knew, it would be regarded as hard news. Something fluttered inside her, and she frowned, quelling the sensation. Aiden had made it clear that Sen was not to interfere with the execution of the Dreamer's plan. Sen was an Imperial agent, a member of an elite team, and casualties happened in war. And what was happening now, as cheerful, excited students clogged the main doorway eager to get in, was as much a battle as any that was fought between starships. She was, of course, stopped when they reached the initial main scanner, and she had to explain to the tired-looking guard that the droid was medically authorized. As proof, she produced her fake ID. The guard waved her through. So far, so good. Time to check in.
Chapter 23.
I really hope Sen's ready for this, Staven said. He and Aiden were piloting the vessel while Del monitored Sen and Sidori through the eyes of the droid.
Me too, Del replied.
She seems pretty sharp, though, and Sidori seems to have it under control. It amused him to see Staven worried about a professional nav-int supervisor handling an undercover mission. So far, Sen was blending in better and learning more than any member of the squad. And to think they all originally thought of her as the rookie. They had backup plans, of course. They always did. But even as Staven expressed his reservations, he didn't seem overly concerned.
Hi, Dad.
Hi, sweetheart, Del said into the comlink. Did they give you any trouble with your Metroid?
No, I'm okay.
Sen said.
Feeling great. So much to see here.
Can't wait to hear all about it, he said. Keep me posted. He clicked off his comlink. To Staven, he said, they're in. Got the droid through no problem. And they've assembled the bomb.
You know, Staven said, the Empire is enormous and complex. Sometimes they're very, very clever. Sometimes they're just stupid and miss the obvious things.
Can't even catch a pair of teenagers smuggling in a bomb. That hadn't escaped Del's notice either. When the team had completed its mission, they would have an earful for Admiral Versio about how much tighter some security needed to be. But then again, by the time they returned, the Dreamers would be no more and the Rebel Alliance was too crippled by its own moral code to push a similarly violent agenda. Its leaders would be as horrified about what was about to unfold as the Empire. As, if he admitted the truth, Del himself was. Staven hadn't really warmed up to anyone from Inferno Squad other than Gideon. And ever since they'd lost Nadrine and Kaeve, he'd just gotten grimmer. There wasn't much chit-chat to pass the time while they waited for the school trip to run its course. So Del leaned back in his chair, laced his hands behind his head, and closed his eyes, trying to focus on something other than the slaughter about to come. In his mind's eye, he saw glowing purple crystals. The factory was clean, shiny, bright, and utterly imperial. The students were appropriately impressed. They seemed thrilled to be here today, chatting, laughing, and taking vids in areas where they were permitted to do so. There were no more stormtroopers, just guards and a few engineers on the site to answer questions. Sen, again, attracted unwanted notice because of the droid. A couple of the students exclaimed over it, their envy turning to sympathy when Sen explained that it was for her medical condition.
"Oh, I'm really sorry to hear that," said a girl who reminded Sen uncomfortably of Nadrine. "Can you have chocolate? I got some for my birthday."
Chocolate was a rarity in this part of the galaxy, and Sen demurred.
"Oh, no, I couldn't take that. You must be new at school, and that's never fun. Especially when you're... Huh, if you need a medical droid." "I'm Anise," the girl said. "Go on, have a piece, or else my kid brother will eat it all when I get home."
Sen went very still. Anise would never get home.
"You eat one for me right now, and tell me how delicious it is," she said, forcing a smile. "Twist my arm,"
Anise joked, and popped one in her mouth.
"It really is so good.
You sure you don't want one?"
she offered again.
"It's more fun watching you,"
Sen said. She hung back as the group filed into the next room. She didn't want to make any more idle conversation with the fiery-haired, freckled Anise. After what felt like forever, their guide said,
"Well, that's all for today, kids. It's time to go into the reception area where you'll get to meet and chat with General Toshin and our own Moff Deksha."
Up at the far end of the room was what was obviously the main table for the visiting dignitaries. It was set with fine linens, plates, and dining utensils. Exquisite decanters sat at the ready for a luncheon that would never come. And for a wild, nearly hysterical moment, Sen wondered if they contained Tonere wine. It would be macabrely ironic if so.
"Do you think you can get there safely?" Sidori whispered.
She considered. The droid might be able to, but even as she had the thought, two other serving droids came out from the side doors, bearing various non-alcoholic libations and appetizers.
"No," she said, "but I can probably get near the end of one of the regular tables. That will more than suffice. I'll go get everything ready."
Toward the beginning of the tour, she had asked to visit the restroom to
get my medication from the droid.
There, she had retrieved all the necessary material to affix their personal bombs. She'd attached hers to her chest and given the components to Sidori, who'd headed off to the restroom to attach his own bomb. Now, she politely asked a guard where the restroom at this end of the building was. Once she was alone, she quickly opened the droid's casing, removed the parts for the deceptively small third bomb, and assembled it quickly. She paused as she prepared to set the timer. She went over everything the bomb's detonation was supposed to accomplish. Delay the factory opening? Yes. That troubled her not at all. Kill them off, the general and a handful of aides? That was a difficult one. But Admiral Versio had warned Inferno Squad that such deaths were acceptable in the name of eliminating the partisans and preventing future attacks. But Moff Deksha and General Toshin wouldn't be the only Imperials dying. Sen thought of Anise, with her artless and complete generosity. With her unknown brother and her parents of nearly 400 other noisy, laughing, fascinated students who were just kids. Sen stayed in the restroom for a long, long time thinking. She made her decision, and then she set the timer. Sidori threw her a relieved glance when she emerged.
"I was worried," he said, slipping his arm around her briefly. "You okay?"
"Yes,"
she said firmly. For the first time since the mission had started, she really was.
"The timer's set.
That gives us 5 minutes from when you activate it. It looks like everyone's here. Let's head over. I'll distract people."
They took glasses of sweet, bubbly beverages from the serving droids and sipped as they made their way to the end of one of the far tables, within 2 meters of the head table, where the dignitaries would be celebrating their luncheon. With Sidori's frame blocking her from view, Sen slipped the bomb, carefully, out of her sleeve and passed it to the droid.
"Hey, Dad," she said on her comlink. "Not feeling so good. Can you come pick me up?"
"Be right there."
Sen took a breath.
"Under the table, in the center. Set for 15 minutes, then get on my back," she whispered to the ID-10.
The droid booped, dipped until it was level with the table, and did as it was told. Then, its mission accomplished, it resettled itself on her back.
"Now."
She and Sidori moved through the crowd as quickly as they could without drawing attention, pointedly not making eye contact. Sidori was like the prow of an old-fashioned watership, parting the cluster of teenagers with Sen following, gripping his hand hard, her heart slamming against her chest. They reached the hallway, heading toward the exit door, and then they were outside, putting distance between themselves and the building as fast as they could. The shuttle would be here in any minute. And then Sidori slowed. Confused, he looked back at the factory.
"It should have detonated by now," he said.
Detonated. Killing everyone in the banquet hall. Killing nearly 400 innocent Imperial subjects who'd done nothing other than be born on this planet and attend school here. Sen reached for his hand.
"I'm sure it's okay," she said.
He hung on to her hand, but still looked back. She tugged.
"They're landing," she said. "Sidori, come on, let's go. The bomb's still going to go off."
But he was shaking his dark head. "Something's wrong. The bomb's a dud." It wasn't a dud. It was functioning perfectly. Functioning with a 15-minute delay, not 5, so that the excited students would have a chance to pile into their shuttle and talk the whole way back about what they'd seen. So that Anissa's brother could steal her candy.
"Sidori,"
she said, begging. The young Kagi turned to her and gently grasped her upper arms. His eyes were wide, and it was strange, so strange to see them brown and not their warm, softly radiant pink.
"Sen,"
he said, and his voice trembled.
"I've been fighting my whole life. So have my family, all my people. I fought so that one day I wouldn't have to fight anymore. I fought for that future. I believe in it, and I have to do everything I can to make sure that future happens."
He couldn't be saying what she thought he was. Frightened in a way she'd never been before, Sen reached up and put her hands on his cheeks, smudging the cosmetic peach tones and revealing his pale gray skin. Wanting to see his skin, his eyes.
"Sidori, it's fine. It's fine. Stay with me."
Her voice cracked on the last word.
"Stay with me 10 more minutes and those children live," she thought. "Stay with me 10 more minutes and you live. Stay with me."
"I don't mind," he said softly, sadly. "I just wish... I wish that future could have been with you."
And then he pressed his lips to hers, kissing her first tentatively, and then passionately, as she returned the kiss with urgency. She clung to him, absurdly thinking she could hold on tight enough to keep him there. But then the cool air rushed in to fill the sudden space between their bodies, and he was gone, racing faster on those strong, long legs than she could ever hope to run. Futilely, stupidly, Sen tried to catch him, shouting his name until she tripped and hit the ground hard and was scooped up by Del, who had seemingly materialized out of nowhere.
"What the hell happened?"
screamed Staven, his face flushed a deep, angry red, both fury and fear in his eyes, as Del rushed into the ship with Sen in his arms.
"The bomb was defective,"
Sen should have lied.
"Sidori went back to fulfill the mission."
Instead, she couldn't speak. Her hand went to her chest, where her own last resort bomb was affixed. Where Sidori's was.
"Sidori,"
she thought.
"I'm so sorry."
The ship took off right as the factory exploded. Less than a minute later, the bomb Sen had delayed also detonated. Through eyes blurred with either grief or joy or perhaps both, Sen looked down through the viewport as hundreds of tiny figures escaped to safety. The next few days were a blur. Sen had never seen Sidori's parents display much emotion. And at first, when the ship had returned to Geosyn and Staven had to tell them the unthinkable, they had seemed stunned and only nodded. They were composed and even kind to Sen, wrapping her in a blanket and sitting her down by the heater to prevent her from going into shock, even as they themselves quietly, unobtrusively did so. The debriefing was stunningly calm. Later, Sen realized why. There was no shock of betrayal around this death, as there had been with Nadrine and Kay Eves. There was no fury or graphic violence to inflame darker, baser emotions as there had been with Azen's interrogation, or more properly, execution. Sidori, the joy of Rue and Halia Vushan's lives, he whom they loved so much they seldom let him out of their sight, had died a courageous death, completing a vital mission when equipment failed. In the eyes of a dreamer, he was a hero. It made something inside her, something Sen had never even known was there, retreat, like a small animal hiding in its burrow. She stuck to the story, yes. She had been careful. Yes, she had instructed the droid to set the timer to 5 minutes. No, she hadn't noticed that anything was wrong with the timer or the bomb. Yes, she had tried to dissuade Sidori from sacrificing himself. And yes, that had been wrong of her, as it wasn't the dreamer's way. Yes, she was proud of Sidori and would always remember him. Yes, Sidori Vushan was a hero. Sen was not sure which was worse, that Sidori had died, or that he had done so trying to ensure that 400 students had died with him. Then Del and Pia Kao were grilled about their preparation of the bomb. They had done everything right, they claimed, and had double-checked each other's work. Staven was frustrated. He did not blame anyone for what had, in the end, simply been a horrible disaster.
"No one owns luck," he said. "We've had some good and we've had some bad. This wasn't anyone's fault. Simply bad luck. We just have to make sure that Sidori didn't die in vain."
Aiden arranged to meet Sen for a walk as soon as possible. The two women walked off from the encampment, arms folded, heads close together. Aiden felt the sympathy from the others as they watched them, close enough to observe, not close enough to hear what they said. "What really happened out there?" Aiden asked in a low voice. "Del is afraid he missed something." "No," Sen said. Her voice was flat, and her eyes stared out into the distance, but her voice sounded calm and in control.
"I take responsibility."
"What do you mean?"
"I made a decision on the spot to delay the timer. It would still explode, still kill Toshin and Deksha, and do some serious damage to the facility. But it would go off after the students were out of the building."
Aiden felt for her. Gently, she said, "We discussed this. It was a necessary sacrifice."
"I thought so too, until I was there," Sen said. "These are innocent children of the Empire, almost 400 of them. The dreamers still made their point. I didn't stop the event, just altered it."
Aiden started to piece it together. "And Sidori didn't know you delayed the timer. He went back."
"He activated his own bomb."
There was no trace of emotion on Sen's face. Aiden groped for words. She'd seldom felt so helpless. "It's not what was ordered. But I can't say that I'm sorry the students survived." Sen pressed her lips together. Then, to Aiden's shock, buried her face in her hands. Aiden felt a frisson of apprehension. For the first time, Aiden felt a real worry that Sen might not be up to this. The rest of the team had all had up-close and personal combat experience. Sen had sat in dark offices watching vid screens, listening to multiple different conversations in multiple different languages and studying dossiers. Most of her field experience had been in simulators. She'd never been forced to make the hard choices, like whether to save 400 students or watch someone you knew, maybe even genuinely cared for, run headlong away from you to blow himself up. And she'd been the one to order Sen to pretend to be romantically interested in Sidori.
"He kissed me," Sen said it bluntly.
Another shock rumbled through Aiden, like a ground-shake tremor of emotion.
"Right before he ran back in, I tried to stop him from going, and he was just faster. I'll never be able to stop seeing it," Sen said, her voice soft, almost a whisper.
Aiden's jaw clenched, trying to find a place of common ground. "We all know a little something about that," she said kindly. Sen's head came up. There were still tears in her eyes, but she was angry.
"No, you don't."
"Sen,
I don't care what you've experienced or what anyone else on the team has experienced. You're not me."
Aiden tried again. Sen waved a hand to silence her.
"Shut up, just shut up. You, Del, Gideon, you'll forget what you've seen eventually. Not all of it. But time will soften it and it'll lose some of its punch. You'll forget some of the details, but I won't. I can't."
Sudden sympathetic horror filled Aiden as she understood what the younger girl was trying to say. Sen had an eidetic memory. If Aiden or Hask or Del relived something awful that had occurred in their lives, it would eventually fade. At least somewhat. Not so for Sen. Whenever she thought about the events of that day, Sen would see them, not through the softening gauziness of distant memory, but as if it were all happening right in front of her, all over again. All because of her choice.
"Oh, Sen," Aiden said. "I'm sorry."
She was, but there was nothing she could do. Sen would have to bear this burden alone. For a long moment, they stood, their faces rendered different silvery shades of gray-white by dusk's light and lichen light. Aiden looked at her team member, her friend, and in her mind's eye, she saw the kind, gray face of Sidori. They stood there a long time.